inspiration from around the nation. It's the 411, with Sharon and Kay. What a way to make your day. Sharon and Kay is on the way. It's the 411, with Sharon and Kay. Inspiration from around the nation. It's the 411 with Sharon Kay. What a way to make your day. Sharon Kay is on the way.
Oh, this is Cherie Fletcher, and when I want to know the 411, I listen to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Oh, wow. Hello, Nashville. People going to be like, who is that? Just type her name in. Something will come up. as everybody tells each other nowadays. Hello, Nashville and all the wonderful people. I certainly do hope that your day is moving right along, going well. We all still standing, or those of us that are. And the ones that are not are hopefully laying down and getting some rest, or getting some tender love and care, in terms of however they're getting it, through health, through safety, through whatever it takes. We are dead up three Wednesdays into the month of August. Lord, this time has literally flown by, and before we know it, it will be fall and Halloween and the whole nine yards. But we still have a few more weeks of heat and warm temps and all that left, and summer, etc. So people are trying to squeeze in some activities and various things that bring them some joy during this time. And we have our news from the community segment coming up in just a few minutes. And it's coming from a member of the WFSK family, who, because of the pandemic, all of our volunteers and the general public are not able to come to the station. And, everything is opening and barely moving at this pace because this health crisis that we're in. So they have not been here, and we haven't been able to receive the public in here at the station or on the campus for quite some time. But God is good, and when the day comes, and not until then, they will be back, and you'll be able to hear from them, and you all can come visit the station and bring your donations, okay? We don't want nothing to stop that. And I know many of you over the years like coming by and touching base and just looking around. Anyway, before I say hello to Ron, are you all right today?
Excellent. And yourself?
I'm doing fine, Sean. How are you doing?
Hold on a second, Ron. Hold on. Yeah. X, are you doing
well? I'm doing well.
Oh, okay.
Well. Yes.
Good, good. I had to do my temperature check. So,
I thought you were talking to me. That's okay.
No, I'm making my way to you.
Okay.
This is Ron Wynn, and Ron is host of the longtime radio show Freestyle. And Ron, as always, it's really good to hear your voice. How you been?
I've been okay, Sharon. I've been okay. I've missed definitely doing the show, but I've continued to listen to the station, to listen to you, and congratulations on you getting the station on NPR. That was a great achievement.
Well, you know, we're on globally, have been for a long time, so, you know, anybody who wants to listen to us has always had an opportunity to hear WFSK. That was a shock for that interview. You know, it's not, it's a one-shot thing, and I was glad that we were able to rise to the occasion. And it happened to happen at a time when I was not even in the station. And it was when we were unable to come into any of the buildings on campus. And, you know, it just was so strange how that came down. But, you know, I got the call on my cell phone. And I was like, yes, we're functioning.
Okay.
Yes, we are functioning. Not normally, but we're functioning. But I think by now, as anybody who's lived past age of one knows, that things in life happen. And it's not the stuff. It's how you handle it. So, you know, quite naturally, everybody misses everything and everybody and all that. But eventually, it will have a brighter day, and things will return back to normal, and we'll take all this for granted, as most people do. But you have been still actively writing and doing the things that you have done for so very long. And I am not a bit surprised by this discussion you'll be involved in conjunction with the Belcourt Theater. Jazz on a summer day, that sounds perfect to me, Ron.
Oh, yeah, it is a classic film, a great film. And the Belcourt is one of the places that's participating in a nationwide celebration of the film being restored by the Library of Congress. So this is like a new 4K restoration print that they have sent to a handful of theaters across the country in recognition of the fact that the film was originally shown in 1959.
Okay. Excellent. So this is classic material.
That's right. That's right.
And what part have you played in, will you play in the discussion? Are you going to be virtual as well as this production will be? Okay.
Yeah, me, B.G. Adair, and Monica Ramey, we're going to be, B.G. Adair is our fine pianist, Mike Ramey, excellent jazz vocalist, and we're going to be doing a Zoom discussion of the film on Tuesday night afterwards. Yes.
Okay, excellent. So, so people need to stay on after it's over with. And is
that's
this
correct, yes.
Do you now? I know you're not old enough, surely, Ron, surely, to remember 1959 and when it came out.
Well, I was 7 years old, but no, I didn't see it when it originally came out. But I have seen it a couple of times in the original print, and I have had a chance to see the new 4K restoration, and it's wonderful. It really is.
Excellent. So the color is just precise and crisp and clear.
Oh yeah, it's pristine. The sound has been digitally boosted as well.
Okay.
I mean, it is really a phenomenal experience.
Okay. Now tell us more about it, so that people that want to experience virtual film and of course the restoration project can do that as well.
Okay, well, what it was in the 1958 Newport Festival, and Bert Stern, who actually by trade was a fashion photographer, but he was a big jazz fan.
Mm-hmm.
He was hired, he and Aram Avakian were hired to film the 1958 Newport Festival, and George Avakian, who at that time was head of Columbia Records, he was in charge of the music for the film.
Mm-hmm.
And the amazing thing is they were able to get, the Newport Festival, of course, is one of the world's most famous jazz festivals going way, way back.
Yeah.
But in 58, they also were having the America's Cup yacht races taking place at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So what Stern and Avakian did was they worked in footage of the America's Cup races alongside the jazz performers. And so you get amazing shots of both the races, Newport, and the jazz musicians performing live. And it's just incredible stuff all the way around.
Well, at the time, I guess with Newport's age being about the same as when this film was done, that was groundbreaking, festival groundbreaking for many people who are not familiar with the jazz scene, right?
Right. And the other thing about the film is they filmed it in color, which not a whole lot of films were being made in the 50s in color.
Right.
Especially not a lot of music films and even fewer jazz films.
Right.
So that right away made it stand out that they filmed it in color. And then the second thing is that the array of talent that they had, I mean, let me just, I'll give you some quick names. I mean, Thelonious Monk Trio, Sonny Stitt, Dinah Washington, Louis Armstrong, Chico Hamilton, Gary Mugen Quartet, and the finale features Mahalia Jackson. And as you know, Mahalia Jackson never performed any secular music in her life.
Right.
But twice she was persuaded to appear at the Newport Festival to close the festival out. So the final act on the film is Mahalia Jackson doing Didn't It Rain and the Lord's Prayer. And that brings it to an incredible conclusion.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, the Newport Jazz Festival started about a year or so before that, right?
Yeah, a couple of years before that, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was still, it wasn't as, it wasn't the institution that it is today.
Oh.
But it was that, this helped it become an institution, this film.
And during 58, black folk were lucky to be on TV or film. And that was such a different era and different time. This was it was huge for black people to even be considered as part of a film, documentary, or anything else. So, you know, can you speak a little bit about that as well?
Oh, yeah. Well, one of the things that people don't like to think about, but is a reality, is that the vast majority of festivals, music festivals in the United States that had anything to do with jazz or blues for decades had to be held either on the East Coast or the West Coast or the Midwest. You could not have them in the South because of Jim Crow laws. So Newport was one place they had, Monterey was another, Chicago. But they were events where you could have integrated seating, I mean, from the very beginning.
Right.
Newport Festival had no segregation. All types of artists, men and women, integrated bands, the whole works. So it was very much ahead of the game politically and culturally.
Most definitely, because that was also historically in 58, that was a dangerous time for black folks to be anywhere.
Yes, it was.
And,
it was, yeah.
You know, I'm just, that's real. So as the viewers of the virtual showing this, was it next week? To keep that in mind while you're watching it. It wasn't like we're free and able to move around now like, you know, back in 58. Because sometimes I've noticed with people, generationally speaking, or even grown folk, they have forgotten from whence they've come or didn't know it or remember it or something and are so far removed from it now, you have to remind people.
Well, one of the things for me growing up in East Tennessee and South Georgia, I've not forgotten Jim Crow. I mean, I'm an old man, but I still do remember as a kid what it was like in the late 50s in those places.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and as I bring that up, you know, I'd like to, you know, I say to some students at times over the years, I reminded them that, you know, black folk did not get to own things. We did not have TV shows. We did not, you know, we just couldn't do it. And because laws kept us from doing that. And because they often have wondered why this and why that and why we're last in this and that and why don't we have this and that. And I have to steady remind them all the time, you know, that the owning a radio station was even unheard of. So, you know, just check it out, understand, and the TV and other things of that nature. We couldn't even be in the front. You know that. I know you know that and remember that. We had to be, black folk had to be in the back or playing behind somebody who may have even been less.
Or they would have shows where they'd fence off the auditorium and you put all the whites on one side and you put all the blacks on the other side.
Yeah.
And there would be performers who would get in trouble sometimes. because the music would be so good that the audiences would just merge together.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the police wouldn't like that. So, I mean, there were actually shows that were stopped because people violated that law of crossing around that roof.
Yeah.
That would be in the middle of the auditorium.
Absolutely. And they certainly did, to a certain degree, suffer consequences as a result of that. Ron, give me a couple more minutes because I need to take this time out, get the traffic report, and then I'm going to let you mention the what it is, time, how much tickets are, blase, and just a quick couple of minutes worth of overview for people just in case somebody is just tuning in. Okay, so hang on.
Okay.
We're getting ready to take time out, Nashville, and get our updated traffic report, see how things are flowing and going in and around the metro area. And on the other side, Rom's going to give you all the details. And at 4:20, I'm happy to welcome back to the show after some years, attorney, author, and consultant, the one and only, my friend, Hannibal B. Johnson. He is back with his new book, and to give us all the details, the new one is entitled Black Wall Street 100. That's coming up in about 5 minutes, so let's take a time out and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Well, good afternoon. Starting to build on the South Loop, the West Loop. It's also busy at times on 40 as you continue out towards Lebanon. Working a crash right now at 40 westbound. It's going to be not too far from Fessler's. The heaviest is eastbound right now. Headed out towards the airport. 7100 block of Highway 70 out on the west side. Watch for a crash there. This traffic report is brought to you by Ripley's Aquarium in Gatlinburg. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
On the next Jazz Night in America, we're in Rhode Island for a show of dynamite music from the Newport Jazz Festival through the years, handpicked and hosted by me, Christian McBride. We've got a power hour of all-stars with some of the best sets to come out of the modern era of the fest. Herbie Hancock, Roy Hargrove, Cecile McLaurin-Savant, and maybe a little bit of music from me. That's next time on Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride. Catch Jazz Night in America every Sunday from 2 to 3 p.m., and Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. here at listener-supported Jazzy 88.
Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All right, to Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University, and my community news segment this 4 o'clock hour is coming from one of the WFSK family. That's Ron Wynn, host of the talk show on Mondays, normally not during a pandemic, but normally Monday nights at 6. So, anyway, having said that, he is involved in an exciting project next week and is giving us the scoop because the public can view it and enjoy it. And, Ron, I never did get the date and time or anything from you.
Okay, the event that I'm doing is going to be Tuesday night, And I would say tune in about 6:30, 7 o'clock, and check out the film. And then later on, we'll be doing the discussion with BG Adair and Monica Ramey. And it's $10.
Okay. Now, and this is being presented by the Belcourt Theater.
By the Belcourt, yes. By Belcourt Theater, yes. And, yes. And I do, and I've got some a bonus, you know, if I can say it, you know.
Yes, you have this.
We're offering
some tickets that people can get the link.
I have three. The first, you know, or any three people who get in touch with me directly, I can get you free admission to be able to screen it.
Okay, and hopefully they'll do that.
Hopefully they'll do that. Yeah, three of your listeners, yeah, and I'll give you my email so they can contact me directly.
Okay, don't forget I have it, unless you're going to use a different one. But
what was that again?
Just call me here at the station.
Oh, okay. I
want the listeners to call me, and then I'll pass your information on, because you know it's hard for people to drive the car, and be in traffic, and you know write down you know. So just contact the station, and I'll get Ron's information to you, or you can call the station. And our office number, and I'll be happy to pass it on. That'll be much easier and much cleaner.
Okay. Yeah, you're right about that, Sharon. There's a whole lot of very dirty stuff going on as far as online. You're right about that.
But not just that, but, you know, we want, you know, to the people, we want to know that people are paying attention. You know, that's important to the progress of WFSK. So having them come through here makes it even more perfect. Now, Ron, you are one of the how many people are in the discussion? Just you and BG Adair?
Me, BG Adair, and Mike Rainey, the three of us. Yes.
Okay, three. And do you have an approximate time when people can expect for you all's discussion to begin?
I would say between 7 and 8.
Okay. From the comfort of your home in...
We'll all be on Zoom. That's
okay,
correct.
Excellent. Yeah. And what you'll get is the link to the feed and be able to enjoy it and stay for the discussion, too.
That's correct, yes.
Okay, excellent. Well, Ron, be sure to follow up with me and let me know how everything goes. I thank the folks over at the Belcourt for also reaching over and making sure that WFSK, Nashville's Jazz Station, is fully aware that this wonderful thing is coming and that you're in it. So, send me a line sometime. Let me know how you're doing.
Oh, I sure will, Sharon. I definitely will. And I continue to listen and support the station. And I urge everybody else out there to do that because there's not many of us left. So, you know.
Oh, Lord. Not many stations. This one's 47 years old, man. We just are. This year has really, really been tough. And there's no words. But anyway, we just do the best we can until times get better. You take good care, and it's really good to hear your voice, okay?
It's good to hear yours too, Sharon. Thank you so much, and thank you for letting me talk about this film.
Absolutely. That was Ron Wynn, and he and the rest of the show people from all the shows, WFSK has like 20 people that aren't here and can't be here during this. And we're very much concerned on this campus with people's health and safety. And it would be utterly irresponsible for us to ask a volunteer to go to an extreme like that. That would be utterly irresponsible. So we're glad. And I've heard it from a few. They're all good. And can't wait for the pandemic to be over. I'm like, it's not going to be so easy. It's just not going to be that easy. It's going to be difficult, and it has been. But, you know, God still continues to be good. Now, speaking of continuing to be good, I want to just welcome back to the show from some years back, Hannibal B. Johnson. And I think, Hannibal, if I'm not mistaken, correct me, I think I've interviewed you at least three times about your book. And it was the one that you wrote, Black Wall Street, from a riot to renaissance in Tulsa's historic Greenwood District. And on the second time that I had you on to talk about the book, mine had arrived in the mail. And you autographed it on June 29th of 2010. And you signed your name and the date. So I'll always have this, that this lives in infamy with you, Mr. Johnson, because I appreciate very much. This is in my personal home collection. And I thank you so much for agreeing to come back.
Absolutely. It's great to be here.
Now, in the 10-year period since we've talked, so very much has happened. And I know you remain quite busy as an attorney and consultant in the Tulsa area, as well as an author. But you continue to track the history in the Tulsa area. And from the 10 years to now, has there been a sea change in Tulsa, or are things looking quasi the same as they were?
I would say there's been an evolution, a sort of a steady progress. You know, we consider ourselves to be on the road to reconciliation, working to heal the wounds of our historical racial trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a chronic sort of work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been at it for a long time. But we continue to make steps. Sometimes they're baby steps, and mm-hmm. sometimes it's incremental, but we make steps toward reconciliation, bringing the community together. And for me, that means really a three-step process. The first involves acknowledgement, coming to grips with our history, as horrible as it is in some respects.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, apology, making apologies where necessary for the damage that's been done to particular portions of our community.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, atonement. What steps do we need to take as a community to heal these festering wounds from almost 100 years ago? You know that on May 31st and June 1st of 2021, less than a year from now, we'll be commemorating the 100th anniversary of the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre, the worst of what was then described as a race riot, the worst of the race riots in American history.
Yeah. And knowing that's the case, do you have relatives that were there?
No, I don't. I've lived here myself for well over 30 years now, so this is my home in the sense that it's the place I've lived longer than any other place I ever lived. So I have deep roots in the community, generally, but I don't have blood relatives living here and don't have that legacy.
Mm-hmm.
Just by accident of circumstance, my father graduated from the black high school here, Booker T. Washington High School, which was a fantastic, nationally known high school at the time as an all-black high school.
Mm-hmm.
Today, it's the best high school in the state of best public high school in the state of Oklahoma. It's a magnet school.
Mm.
So my father graduated from that school in 1942. And some of the icons in this community were people that he knew simply by virtue of the fact that he spent 1 year, his senior year in high school, living here in Tulsa.
Excellent. Now, your history and research on that area and, you know, I guess, could we call this a new edition of your original book or your original work? Because this will be the 2020 edition. Is that
it's really more in the order of a supplement.
Okay.
So the point of the first book was
to tell the history of the community.
Mm-hmm.
There had been a book that told, brilliantly actually, told the story of the massacre.
Mm.
My view is that the massacre cannot be fully appreciated without an understanding of the people mm-hmm. and the community in which it occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the massacre is but a chapter in a grand narrative that mm-hmm. is about the community,
yeah.
the black community in Tulsa. The Greenwood community is what it's called here, but it was known as Black Wall Street for the incredible mm-hmm. entrepreneurship and economic activity going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And this concentrated 35 square block area that abuts downtown, separated by the Frisco tracks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the second book, Black Wall Street 100, has a well-considered very intentional subtitle, which
yes.
is An American City Grapples with Its Historical Racial
mm-hmm.
Trauma.
Mm-hmm.
The idea behind the second book is to tell the story of the evolutionary healing process, the journey that the community's been on, these many years.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a journey that should resonate with communities across the nation, because as we know, just 2 years prior to what happened in Tulsa
mm-hmm.
was Red Summer. Red is a metaphorical reference to the blood that flowed in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
James Weldon Johnson gave it this
mm-hmm.
name in 1919, summer and fall of 1919, well over two dozen major events that were called race riots. They were really, for the most part, invasions of black communities by white mobs, that were acts of vigilantism, what they really were, but they were called race riots. So we have a lot of healing to do in this country
yes.
around not just those so-called race riots, but around lynching.
Yes.
Lynching is domestic terrorism. The point of lynching is not simply to punish an individual, but rather to send a message to the group to which that individual belongs, most
mm.
often African Americans. So lynching was a tactic used to reinforce white supremacy. So we have to heal from that as well.
Yeah, no question. Now, if I remember distinctly in the prior years and prior books that people have written, they referred to it as race riot, and now it's termed massacre. What brought about the change in terminology to correctly define it as what it is?
That question is actually more complex than it may
mm-hmm.
seem, because I have a distinct and somewhat unique take on this question about nomenclature or the terms that we assign. Race riot is a term of art. It was a term that was created to describe these events. So when we hear the words race riot to describe such events, it's imperative that we ask, who named the event?
Mm-hmm.
Who was absent from the table when the name was given out? What practical significance is held by the name that is given?
Mm-hmm.
Once we know the circumstances and the facts, what label or what term would we assign to these events? And then finally, if such an event were to happen today, what would we call it?
Mm-hmm.
So that's essentially a five-step process of critical thinking that I suggest to anyone who's looking at such events.
Mm-hmm.
Not a knee-jerk reaction that assigns it one particular term or the other to the exclusion of everything else, but a thorough analysis of power that's wielded by people who name things, suppression or oppression
mm-hmm.
that's experienced by people who are not able to come to the table when these decisions are being made.
Right.
And then practical impact, what practical import is the name that's given out.
Mm-hmm.
Then once we look at these events, let's look at the events in Tulsa. So we could conclude that the term massacre is a better term than race riot.
Mm-hmm.
But we could also conclude that the term pogrom might be appropriate. That is, an intentional effort to move out the black community and take this land.
Mm.
We might conclude that Holocaust is an appropriate term.
Mm.
Holocaust, really, the essence of a Holocaust is the burning, which is exactly what happened to this community. It was
mm.
burned to the ground.
Mm.
We might conclude that some terms that we hear mostly in Eastern Europe, like ethnic cleansing, and sometimes in Africa, like genocide, maybe
yeah.
those terms are appropriate.
Yes.
So my job is not to tell you what you must call it. My job is to have you think about what happened and think about what sorts of terms have application. Is it one term? Is it more than one term?
Yeah.
So it's a more complex process than I think some people have heretofore thought.
Sure.
And so locally, some people wanted a term that they thought was more apt in terms of describing the destruction.
Sure.
So massacre was a term that seems to have stuck.
Yeah.
I will say that the one pushback that you could give to using the term massacre is that we know that there was a fierce black resistance to the white mob who invaded the community.
Mm-hmm.
It was short-lived because they were outgunned and outnumbered and outmanned.
Sure.
But there was a fierce resistance nonetheless.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you hear the word massacre, you don't appreciate this element of resistance that was actually there in practice.
Yeah. Well, let me say, I'm asking purely out of I deal in a real world, and I do understand that at the time, who wrote the articles, who wrote the history, who wrote the stories, and largely, unless it was black press, it wasn't us. So people paint pictures how they want them painted. And
absolutely.
Yeah, so
absolutely. The other thing I would add, though, is that we have to be careful not to condemn people who use the term race riot today, because that is the term that you find in the literature. And even if you listen to the survivors who were interviewed some 20 years ago, almost all of them are dead now, but the vast majority of them use the term race riot because that was a term that they knew.
Right.
But they never got to the point where the discussion was being had around changing the nomenclature.
Exactly.
So let's not denigrate people who use other terms.
No.
Let's talk about what terms are most appropriate.
Well, yeah. No, this is, I'm not even going to that level. I'm just saying how times have changed and thought processes have evolved. And that,
absolutely.
Yeah, and that's where I'm coming from, because I like calling things as they are. It is what it is. Truly, it is what it is. And it wasn't the president that came up with that. Do you all remember the song by Tower of Power? It is what it is. Let's take a time out and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Good afternoon. Watching it build here on the South Loop, the West Loop, 24 West here by James Robinson Parkway. Moving that wreck, it's 40 westbound near Fessler's out on the west side. That's two cars involved, 7100 block of Highway 70. Starting to build pretty good on 65 down into Brentwood, Franklin through Williamson County. This traffic report brought to you by Prince's Hot Chicken, located 5814 Nolensville Pike. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
This weekend on Blue Time in the City.
I was raised in the hood.
That's Eddie Cotton out of Jackson, Mississippi. He's talking this weekend. He has the Fast Track Blues Soundbite.
Bang, 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 bang.
And John Lee Hooker's birthday falls this weekend. He'll perform one of his past performances for us this weekend. Join me, Arjun Bailey, the happiest man in America, for Blues Time in the City this weekend.
Catch Blues Time in the City Sundays from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on Jazzy 88.
Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
It's What's the 411. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All right, to Nashville. Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. And this afternoon, the book is Black Wall Street 100. And I'm happy to welcome back to the show after some years of being on earlier. Years. Author, attorney, and consultant all the way from Tulsa, Oklahoma, Hannibal B. Johnson. Now, Mr. Johnson, you have written so many books that as I was glancing at the list, I forgot that you have been on the show also to discuss apartheid in Indian country. So there have been two. Now, this is your third one that we've had on the show, but there's so many that you have done. And you have literally devoted your life to this research. So I'm eternally grateful for a window of time from you. Now, everybody in the country was excited and celebrating Black Wall Street. And some people were learning for the first time and everything about the anniversary. The official one is next year as we prepare for it. So the nation itself was going through quite a bit. Can you express from your community how things were going during all this from the George Floyd lynching among the many things that have happened against our community was that the catalyst for some things to happen in your opinion or not?
Absolutely. All this stuff is interconnected. It goes back to this notion of historical racial trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the unfortunate George Floyd incident, the murder, mm-hmm. traces back to a long negative history of Black folks and law enforcement officers. Yeah. Even in the context of the massacre here in 1921, mm-hmm. we know that law enforcement officers deputized members of the white mob that invaded and destroyed the Black community. So we have a relationship between the Black community and the police that's really fraught because of history.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that you might remember is that during all the protests and the commotion and the unrest throughout the United States,
yeah.
the president held his first campaign rally here in Tulsa
yeah.
on Juneteenth weekend.
Huh.
He was expecting 20, 30, 40,000 folks and got maybe 6,000 or 7,000.
Mm-hmm.
But the media descended on the community in tremendous numbers. The silver lining in that for us was that the media, while they were here, really explored our history.
Mm-hmm.
Did many, many interviews and segments on news magazines about
yeah.
our history, the pendency of the anniversary of the massacre, which is coming up in 2021.
Uh-huh.
We actually had on historic Greenwood Avenue, under cover of darkness, some artists painted Black Lives Matter,
hmm.
and it's still there.
Uh-huh.
There's been some controversy about its permanence or its removal, but it's still there, and that's mm-hmm. being worked on. So, really, the unrest throughout the nation. We've had protests here as well, but the unrest throughout the nation has literally been throughout the nation,
mm-hmm.
In cities and communities and hamlets all across the country. And what we're seeing here is what we're seeing across the United States is
yeah.
that the number of white allies for something like Black Lives Matter
mm-hmm.
has exploded, and it's growing exponentially.
Mm-hmm.
Something that we may not have thought possible just 5 years ago has really come to fruition.
That is true. And also it gave people an opportunity. I can remember over the years people didn't know what Black Wall Street was or Greenwood District. They didn't know anything about that. So it gave people a true opportunity to get some Black history in such a way that worked, I think, in a profound manner for your region to put, you know, people had forgotten or I don't know what was going on there, but I'm just saying the whole world was talking about Tulsa, okay? The world.
Absolutely, and it's important, as you pointed out, that the conversation wasn't just about the devastation.
Uh-uh.
It was about Black Wall Street, which uh-huh. is about economics and entrepreneurship, and it's about historical role models and icons who did remarkable things in the uh-huh. face of extraordinary odds. It's about promise and possibility, and that's really what we need to remember uh-huh. about this important story here in Tulsa.
Definitely. And you all have managed to still continue to move forward and don't let it keep you down. And I'm on a couple of mailing lists over the years of different things that are going on in your region. And just prior to the announcement that the president was going to go there and a lot of the things that happened, I think it was Tiffany, is her last name Crenshaw? Help me, Lord.
Tiffany Crutcher.
Yeah, Crutcher, sorry.
Uh-huh. Her brother was Betty Shelby, a police officer, several years ago.
Oh, yeah, and I was talking to her about you all getting ready for the celebration and the different things of that nature. And then in between, after I had her on, and then like the following week was when George Floyd was lynched by knee. And then I see her all over the news and everything, speaking, et cetera. And then, you know, the next thing I know that on Juneteenth, the president was going to come. I was like, you know what? A lot of things are playing out right now. A lot of things are falling in a row. And a lot of them are falling in a row around that city and those people there and the pain and suffering that the ancestors in that region had to endure. And I certainly hope that the mainstream community, the white community, is coming to grips with some of this stuff and is trying to come to the aid of the community.
Right, and I'm glad you mentioned that because one of my major projects right now is that I'm the local curator for a history center that we're building on the southeast corner of Greenwood and Archer.
Mm-hmm.
This will be a world-class history center. We're building it at a cost of $20-plus million. We're raising money for an endowment.
Mm-hmm.
But we have raised, of the money we needed to raise, which is about $30 million, we've raised probably $23 or $24 million already.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had great support from the corporate and philanthropic communities here, mm-hmm. but great support really from individuals all throughout the country.
Mm-hmm.
This will be a center in which people can come and in an experiential way,
mm-hmm.
not just learn our history, but take the lessons of our history,
yes.
and leverage those to work to address the current challenges that we face,
mm-hmm.
whether it's Black Lives Matter, whether it's disparities in health care or educational deficits,
mm-hmm.
or mass incarceration. We realize that there are modern-day incarnations of race-based issues that we've seen before.
Yeah.
So we have to not only know about what happened to us in the past,
right.
but we have to be ready for what we have to address now in the present for the future.
When people come to on their historical meccas there and to see and visit now since Juneteenth or since May, are they shocked and surprised of how the Greenwood District looks now?
I would guess that probably more than most than half the folks are surprised that what exists in terms of what they had in their mind,
yes.
There is really a stark difference between what exists, which is basically one block of small businesses. My office is mm-hmm. on the Greenwood District and the 100 block, which is the most historic section. The rest of the Greenwood District has changed dramatically.
Mm.
So it's a fully integrated community. Much of the land is not black owned. It's residential, commercial, mm-hmm. educational, entertainment,
mm.
Religious. It's and on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
Its character of the community is tremendously different from what it was
mm-hmm.
in its heydays. I say heydays because it had a heyday prior to 1921, but it peaked again in the early to mid 1940s. So I serve on the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre Centennial Commission. I'm chair of the Education Committee and curator for the History Center. And we're working really to unite the community, to brand the community in a consistent way, to elevate it for cultural and heritage tourism, to promote and create opportunities for entrepreneurs in the community. We're doing all these things in the run-up to the commemoration of the 100th anniversary, but our work will extend beyond that. The anniversary is a point, but the work that we do in the way of community building will continue well beyond the anniversary.
No question about it. Now, Mr. Johnson, 102 years ago, we were in a pandemic, and the community has survived that, but couldn't survive the Black Wall Street massacre. That's bad.
I would just add an asterisk. So even though the massacre decimated the community and destroyed most of its structures, it did not destroy most of its people.
Right.
And what's remarkable, I have a book for children on the third grade reading level called Up from the Ashes. What's remarkable is that title is true. This community was rebuilt up from the ashes, and it peaked again in early 1940s to mid 1940s. So while it was decimated temporarily, the story really is the story of the indomitable human spirit. The fact that black people in this community said, "We shall not be moved."
Yes.
They weren't.
Amen. I think we can all touch and agree on that. And just in the remaining a minute or so, for people who are unfamiliar with the massacre and exactly what happened, can you give just a minute or so to just take people down that memory lane, please?
Yes. So, foundationally, there were systemic and structural issues in America generally that created the atmosphere that led to the massacre. Racism was rampant. There were these so-called race riots throughout the United States. Most prominently, Red Summer 1919. There were lynchings throughout the United States, including here in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
You know, in Tulsa in particular, there was a desire on the part of some of the white corporate interests to take the land the black community sat on and use it for other purposes. So there was a trigger incident involving a black teenage boy and a white teenage girl in an elevator. Something happened on the elevator that caused them to bump into one another. She overreacted. The story got reported by a local newspaper called the Tulsa Tribune. It got reported as an attempted rape. And that really fomented hostility in the white community. A large white mob gathered. That mob numbered in the thousands ultimately. They were confronted by a small group of black men, some of them armed, some of them World War I veterans. There was a conflict. Words were exchanged between the two groups. A white man tried to take a black man's gun. The gun discharged. This all happened on May 31st, 1921. And the result was the massacre, which killed somewhere between 100 and 300 people, destroyed at least 1,250 homes in the black community, destroyed churches, schools, business places, and a library as well, rendered many people in the black community, most people, in fact, homeless. Many black folks were interned during this massacre, just very much like people of Japanese ancestry were interned during World War II. And black families spent days, weeks, and months living in tent cities set up by the Red Cross as they began rebuilding, even as the embers still smoldered.
Wow. They had nowhere to go. That's just...
That's the short version.
So to get more in depth, please check out the books of Hannibal Johnson. You may want to go back to the Black Wall Street book from, what was that, 20-something years ago or 15, whenever it was.
Well, it actually came out in 1998, but I think you're absolutely onto something. Ideally, you'll read Black Wall Street from Ride to Renaissance in Tulsa's historical Greenwood District, yes. And then you'll want to know more up-to-date information. You'll read Black Wall Street 100
right.
And American City Grapples with Its Historical Racial Trauma. Both are available on Amazon.com.
Right, along with his other books.
Along with the other, absolutely.
Oh, boy, Hannibal, this has been my treat for sure. And as I love history, I'm always looking for more updates and things of that nature. So I just respect this work that you're doing, and I greatly appreciate you giving me the time this afternoon to discuss Black Wall Street 100.
It's been great. I look forward to my next guest appearance on your show.
Yeah. Now, see, that's good as gold right there. Because it's recorded, and I'll be able to put it in live forever in my podcast.
That's right.
Most definitely. But I do cherish this, and I know the community loves getting this historic information. So again, thank you so much. And I know you have a website, and you also, your books are available wherever they're sold. Are you urging people to visit your site, or exactly what?
Absolutely. The site is www.hannibalbjohnson.com. There are direct links to Amazon. You can order the books. You can look over the books. I have lots of articles on the site. Mm-hmm. I have videos that I've done on the site. Just put a new video up there. I'm actually putting one up today, but mm-hmm. there are a lot of other great videos and documentaries and other information on that site.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And I will be in touch soon.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye. That is attorney, consultant, and author Hannibal Johnson from his office in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And every one of the books that we've had on the show and, you know, the interviews have all been superb, and you do learn a great deal from his research, many, many years of research. Just good stuff. Black Wall Street 100. Now we're going to get our news, and on the other side we have more news from the community, and then we're going to hear about combating racism through storytelling. And, you know, that's what our community's long done is, you know, share information, and here's how generationally we handle that and this and that and that. So we'll be speaking with Miss Ori in just a couple of minutes. But first, let's get our news, and then we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.